We are ready to hear arguments in Anderson Living Trust. Citizen Appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'm Brad Raquel, representing the appellants. First off, I'd like to note that I have utmost respect for Judge Browning. He's probably one of the most accomplished district jurists in the Tenth Circuit. However, even the most accomplished judges, and I love to appear in his courtroom, his very excellent courtroom demeanor, but there can be errors made. In this particular case, the appellant's appeal, the denial of class certification, I believe that there are a number of issues that are key to their appeal. The first one is we've got a recent decision called Anderson versus Energen out of the circuit dated January 9, 2018, which clarifies a holding that Judge Browning went the other way on regarding the implied duty to market. Also, we believe that the judge erred and did not follow the Tenth Circuit's decision in Roderick versus XTO.
So you think Energen is contrary to the district court's ruling?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. The Energen is contrary to the court's ruling in that Judge Browning ruled that the implied covenant to market is limited as it's stated in the Elliott decision. In the Elliott decision...
And I thought Energen confirmed, blessed, restated Elliott.
Actually, Your Honor, I guess it depends on how you read Elliott. It does not confirm the way Judge Browning read Elliott. Judge Browning read Elliott to say that the implied duty to market, now I'm not talking about the marketable condition rule, but the implied duty to market is limited to producing the gas, processing, and marketing. Nothing further. In Energen, and again, it's obviously unpublished by this time, but case docket number is 13CV909WJCG, and it states on page 22, while New Mexico law certainly implies a duty on oil and gas operators to diligently market the product for the benefit of the royalty owners. And then it goes on to say, we continue to find no indication they would expand it to include the marketable condition rule. Well, Judge Browning held that it did not include the duty to diligently market to benefit the royalty owners. And that was part of our third cause of action that Judge Browning dismissed, not once, but basically in his language of motions to dismiss orders twice, one in June of 2013, and then in his order, I believe it was filed in August of 2015.
So are you saying that from the outset you have pled an implied duty to market?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you have not pled a marketable condition rule?
Yes, we have pled both.
You've pled both.
And if I can refer, Your Honor, to our language, which was repeated in our fourth amended complaint, let me turn to that real quickly.
Well, is it true that the district court thought you were pleading the marketable condition rule and dismissed that, struck that twice, maybe three times?
Your Honor, and
then you said, but wait a minute, really what we're trying to assert is implied duty to market. And he said, okay, that sounds fine. If you want to amend your complaint to say that, you may do so.
Your Honor, here's...
And that's way at the end. Then we're talking about the Fifth Amendment amended complaint, right?
The Fifth Amendment complaint, Your Honor, was not specifically adding the implied duty to market. It added a very... It added a statement in there that was, I believe, part of the implied duty to market, and that is that the lessee has a duty to get the highest reasonably available price for the hydrocarbons for the lessors or the royalty owners. We had already pled the facts that were dismissed by Judge Browning in his two orders to dismiss, and in his order denying class certification, and he repeated it in his order denying reconsideration, he says, if we had an implied duty to market case, then it would have very well been certified, but we did not. And he held that he had to follow Elliott because it was precedential law from the Tenth Circuit. And Elliott said the implied duty to market is limited in New Mexico to only producing, processing, and marketing the gas, not having anything to do with then paying the royalty owners maybe what they marketed it for, but it was limited to action, those particular actions. And so he held that this is the language that we had in the third and fourth amended complaints. I'm reading paragraph 53, document 129, which is our fourth amended complaint, page 19. Williams and or its predecessors entered into non-arm's length contractual arrangements and or deducted improper costs or charges, and therefore have not compensated plaintiffs and class members on the terms of their leases and New Mexico law, which arrangement resulted in plaintiffs receiving a smaller value per MCF of gas, liquids, condensate, and or other hydrocarbons sold or used than they would have received had Williams fulfilled its duty to the plaintiffs as lessee, operator, purchaser, and remitter. And we go on to talk more about both the breach and the facts that they did. And then in the prayer for relief, we say that we should be awarded judgment against Williams and damages for breaching its duty to properly market all of plaintiffs and class members' hydrocarbons.
The first time that you made a highest obtainable price claim, standalone claim, was in the Fifth Amended complaint. Is that right?
That specific language, yes, Your Honor. However,
and nobody ever sought to certify that.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it's not before us now.
I don't believe that. Let me put it this way, if I could, Your Honor. To obtain the highest reasonable obtainable price, which is the language we used, I believe that is part and parcel of an arm's length contractual complaint, and that they did not, but there is a duty, in my opinion, to obtain the highest reasonable price, not just to sell it to your affiliate and price your royalty on that sale and then sell it downstream for higher prices. And that's what we're talking about with a non-arm's length sale. And that was actually mentioned in a footnote in the Roderick opinion out of a district court case coming from Oklahoma and saying, well, in Roderick, you've got to go look at the leases to see if they negate the marketable condition rule and do a lease analysis. They
but that's Oklahoma, and we're talking New Mexico, right?
Yes, except we're also talking, Your Honor, whether there is any necessity to go do a lease analysis, as Judge Browning mentioned in his certification order. In Roderick, they held, and I'm sorry, Your Honor, I misspoke. Roderick versus XTO came out of Kansas,
okay,
not out of Oklahoma, but the Roderick Tenth Circuit Court mentioned a case from Oklahoma.
But still the same problem, because you have the rulings by the New Mexico courts and also our rulings agreeing or upholding those rulings as regards your claim. And the claim is barred in New Mexico.
I am not sure I understand your question, Your Honor.
The marketable condition rule.
Yes, Your Honor. What I'm talking about
is not a claim permitted in New Mexico. Is that true?
We had a claim for it, Your Honor, but
no, I know you sought it, but is it recognized under New Mexico law?
Correct. It's not yet recognized in New Mexico. Absolutely. But it is in Colorado, and that was one of our subclasses that we suggested that Judge Browning did not certify either.
Can we spend a minute on jurisdiction?
I think we need to.
Yeah. A few days after you filed your appellate brief, the Supreme Court decided Microsoft versus Baker.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which held that if you dismiss with prejudice your claims against the defendant after you've been denied certification of your class, you can't appeal the denial of the failure to certify.
I understand.
How are you going to distinguish Microsoft from this case?
Your Honor, I think we clearly responded to that in our reply. And if I can locate that here, Judge, in the reply, first of all, while I'm looking for that, let me mention that in this district, in this circuit, in the 10th Circuit, Reed versus Heckler also determined that a party who had a claim both that was dismissed as well as his class certification request was denied could appeal.
Yeah, well, that's now we have a Supreme Court case since then.
Okay, Your Honor.
The Supreme Court, as I read the opinion, is essentially saying there's a process for appealing the denial of certification. You can do three things. You can do a discretionary appeal where we can decide that it's important and we will hear your appeal from denial.
23F, yes.
You can seek an interlocutory appeal through other statutes.
Yes.
Or you can pursue the case. And maybe the district court will change its mind, and maybe it won't. If it doesn't, you have to go to judgment. There may be a judgment against you. Maybe you'll win on the merits. Then when you can appeal the denial of class certification at that time.
Here's the difference, Your Honor.
Good. That's what I'm waiting for.
In Microsoft, they made a voluntary dismissal of all claims. In our case, we entered into a stipulated judgment that specifically reserved the right to appeal the class certification orders.
Wait, there wasn't a stipulation that you could appeal. They opposed that. But what's interesting is the Ninth Circuit that was reversed by Microsoft said if there was a stipulated dismissal, then we can't hear it. We can hear it when it's a voluntary dismissal. So they made the exact opposite distinction, saying in the Microsoft versus Baker situation, we can hear it, stipulated, we can't, because you've given up your rights when you stipulate. And so that distinction is ironic to me, because no court, apparently, has said when they're stipulated, you can go. But in any event, the reasoning to Microsoft versus Baker doesn't care about that.
I would agree, Your Honor, that in the Microsoft case, they, after when they dismissed their claims, all of their claims with prejudice, I think the court correctly found they could not appeal the denial of the class certification. But I think that is factually distinguishable from where you reserve the right, whether it be by.
They reserved their right in Microsoft. Baker said, I reserve the right to appeal. They said that, and Microsoft said, you can say that, but we don't agree to it. And it doesn't matter anyway. You can't confer jurisdiction on the appellate court.
I think you're right about that. You certainly can't confer jurisdiction on the appellate court.
Did you settle for fair value? In other words, is your position as the same as though you had fully litigated the matter?
Your Honor, I believe so. I mean, there was some little compromise there, but we pretty well got what the damages of the named plaintiffs were in our settlement, I feel like. It was a question of spending a large amount of money to try the case on the merits for a very relatively small amount of remuneration that only the named plaintiffs would have, or go ahead and take the settlement offer, be able to then appeal under the rationale that we have of Reed versus Heckler, Lucero, the Garrity case.
Exactly what Baker argued in Microsoft.
And, Your Honor, I believe that in the Baker case, did they not find, and I can't recall it specifically, and I don't have a copy right here in front of me, but there was no final order?
That wasn't a finding. That was a determination on the practicalities, essentially saying you can't circumvent Rule 23F by this sort of maneuver. And when you filed your appeal, you had some authority for it. It wasn't an unreasonable thing for you to do. But 3 days after your, it was less than a week, I think, after your brief was filed, the law changed.
Well, and we felt like we adequately addressed it in our reply. It did not hold that the plaintiff's dismissal of claims was not final. It held there could be no appeal of a 1291 claim by a voluntary dismissal of all claims. That's what I believe Baker held, and I believe that's distinguishable here.
Yeah. We'll read Baker closely, I'm sure. We're ready to hear from the opposing counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
It's my privilege to speak to this court today on behalf of the defendants, the appellees in this case. For at least three reasons, this court should dismiss this appeal. First, under Baker versus Microsoft, the order denying class certification is not a final decision within Section 1291 and is therefore not appealable. Second, under Article 3, plaintiff's appeal is moot for the reason contemplated by the Supreme Court in Roper. In Roper, the court said the right of a litigant to employ Rule 23 is a procedural right only, ancillary to the litigation of substantive claims. Should these substantive claims become moot in the Article 3 sense by settlement of all personal claims, for example, the court retains no jurisdiction over the controversy of the individual plaintiffs. Third, plaintiffs' principal argument that the district court erred by failing to certify an implied duty to market highest obtainable price claim was neither properly preserved nor the subject of any reversible error by the district court. With respect to finality, the Supreme Court in Coopers versus Librand specifically said that a district court's determination that an action may not be maintained as a class action is not a final decision within the meaning of Section 1291.
It's a final decision, though, if the case goes to judgment. It's not as though the party seeking class certification can never get to the Court of Appeals.
I would agree with the court that if the case goes to judgment on the merits and a judgment entered that is following litigation, and that there would then be a right to appeal the denial of class certification.
Isn't that what a settlement for fair value is?
I mean,
the rule shouldn't be that you can't settle your case, you have to try it.
Well, let me talk about, I think there are two parts to your question, Your Honor. One deals with the principles of finality, and the other deals with the question of whether or not under Article 3 there is a still existing case or controversy. So with respect to finality first, in Microsoft, what the plaintiffs did was they took a voluntary dismissal with prejudice, which Microsoft stipulated to. So you had essentially an agreement that the case was going to be dismissed with prejudice. The plaintiffs can claim that they were going to reserve their rights to appeal. Microsoft says, well, we don't agree that you have such a right. In this case, we have essentially the same thing. Here we have a settlement in which the plaintiffs dismissed all their claims with prejudice and reserved a right to appeal any right they might have to appeal the denial of class certification.
You paid them money, though. That's the difference, right?
In
Microsoft, it was just kind of a tactic, I think Justice Ginsburg called it, to get back to the Court of Appeals, whereas here they said, we'll take so much money, and you wrote them a check. That seems different to me than Microsoft.
Well, it certainly is different in the sense that here you have a voluntary dismissal of a settlement of a lawsuit with prejudice based upon a settlement agreement between the parties. I mean, I will agree with that. That is not sufficient in my mind to avoid the finality analysis that the court should undertake.
Well, and I just need a little help here to get over this hump that I'm on, because I'm not following you. Are you saying that if you settle, as opposed to take something to a jury verdict, that you can't bring your class certification issue to the Court of Appeals?
That is exactly what I'm saying, Your Honor. And the courts in the Fourth, in the Sixth, in the Eighth, and in the Ninth Circuit have so held.
The Ninth Circuit just had an exception when it wasn't.
In fact, in the Ninth Circuit, they found that the dismissal of prejudice, a voluntary dismissal of prejudice in the absence of a settlement, was sufficient to maintain enough adversity to permit an appeal. They would have held that in the case of a voluntary settlement agreement that reserved such a right, that no appeal would have been possible. And I would refer the court to specifically to the Campion case, a 2014 case, in which the plaintiff reserved a right to appeal, and the Ninth Circuit said that makes no difference. This matter has been settled. And because it is settled, there's no longer any personal stake of the plaintiff in the controversy. And the personal stake of the plaintiff in the controversy that would be sufficient for jurisdiction under Article 3 in the Ninth Circuit is that they must maintain some sort of continuing financial stake in the outcome of class certification, such as an entitlement to an incentive fee award.
Let me see if I... It seems to me that you're making two arguments. One is the position of the majority of the Supreme Court in Microsoft, and the other is the position of the concurrence.
That is correct.
Because the concurrence had the same view that you're facing here, that, boy, this looks like a final judgment to me.
That is correct.
But the majority, five justices, disagreed with that and said, we're going to take a pragmatic view, and you've got to use the interlocutory appeal process of 23F if you're going to appeal before the case has been litigated fully and you lose. The concurrence said that's a final judgment, but there's not Article 3 controversy.
That is completely correct, Your Honor. There are essentially two arguments. One is based on finality, and the other is based on Article 3. Certainly the Chief Justice, along with Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, were of the view that there is no Article 3 jurisdiction here. The majority opinion, the six other justices, didn't reach the question of Article III jurisdiction. They decided that when you look at Section 1291 and you give it what the Supreme Court requires, a practical, in contrast to a technical, assessment of finality, a dismissal with prejudice that reserves a right to appeal a purely interlocutory order, while technically final, is not as a practical matter final. I think the best way that it might be put is that you look to the substance rather than the form of the appeal. While final in form, the plaintiffs do not present an appeal from a final order. The substance of this appeal is from an interlocutory class certification order. It is an appeal from an inherently interlocutory order that is masquerading as an appeal of a final decision. In the majority opinion in Microsoft, the court made this very plain, pointing out that the plaintiffs were seeking review, quote, of only the order striking their class allegations. They did not complain of the final order that dismissed their case. And the court went on to say, in other words, a technically final class certification was not practically final. Quote, plaintiffs in putative class actions cannot transform tentative interlocutory orders into a final judgment within the meaning of Section 1291 by dismissing their claims with prejudice. And the fact that we have a settlement as opposed to a purely voluntary dismissal with prejudice does not alter that analysis. The reservation of the right to appeal the denial of class certification is a reservation of a right to appeal a purely interlocutory order, which can have no effect on the named plaintiff's claims of any kind, because they were completely satisfied. It's not like an appeal of a sanctions order or an appeal of an attorney's fees order or an appeal of an attorney-client privilege situation where you have the appellant's rights having been substantially prejudiced in that regard, even though it is an interlocutory order. Here, we're dealing with a purely procedural ruling.
Well, on that point, if we've said, and we know from Microsoft, that the parties can't use that tactic of voluntarily dismissing their claims. And we're talking about, can you settle in fair value and reserve that right? And I guess the only, and you're saying no, I guess the only opportunity then is to forego settlement and take it all the way to a verdict. But what rights do the named plaintiffs have at that point to appeal the
interlocutory? If there is a verdict, they would be entitled to appeal the denial of class certification.
What's the difference? Why can they there but they can't if they settle?
Because in the context of a final judgment that has been litigated to a conclusion, you have maintained throughout the case the adversity between the parties, and that adversity continues. Whereas in the case of a settlement, we're not adverse to them anymore. They have given us a full and final release and a covenant not to sue us. Where's the adversity?
I think that's what the concurrence is saying. I think the majority just says we have a rule, and we're not, as a practical matter, we're not going to interpret finality to allow circumvention.
I agree that it is unnecessary to reach the constitutional Article III question unless the court somehow first determines that what is in front of it is in fact a final decision. I suggest to the court that as Microsoft points the reason, gives three reasons why it is not final. One is that it must be practically, not technically, final, and as I have said, this case does not satisfy that. Second, the underlying purpose The underlying purpose of the firm finality rule is to promote the efficient administration of justice. An attempt to secure an appeal as a matter of right from a denial of a class certification order disserves that purpose. Let me explain why. A dismissal with prejudice renders the difficult, complex, intricate, factual, and legal determinations associated with Rule 23 class certification irrelevant and unnecessary. It's irrelevant and unnecessary because there's nobody in front of the court complaining anymore with respect to the substantive claims. And the efficient administration of justice counsels for this court to preserve its resources to address the situations where you actually need to delve into Rule 23.
Well, and you would limit Baker just to the type of case we have here, that is class certification, particularly the majority. I mean, we're talking about Rule 23F and the end run, if you will, that's attempted, allegedly. And that's the focus. But if you have a case, and we have them all the time, where you have settlements at the end of the case, and they are appealed, and we look at everything that went before, everything's good, we pretty much start over to see if anything was done improperly by the district court.
If there is a settlement that results in a consent judgment, and the right that is reserved to appeal is from what is in fact, a final decision, an adverse decision, such as a summary judgment order or a sanctions order or an attorney's fees order, that reservation would confer jurisdiction on the court to hear it.
So you need an adverse ruling by the district court on the merits.
Yes, I think you do. I think in the absence of an adverse ruling and a reservation of a right that is in fact, prejudice is some substantive right. You have to conduct the finality analysis that Baker versus Microsoft calls for.
Well, there are two ways of getting an interlocutory review that the court recognized.
Yes, I mean besides Rule 23F, the plaintiffs could have asked to certify under 1292B.
Right.
I see that I'm out of time, and I appreciate very much the opportunity to address the court.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is submitted.
Thank you.